You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Matt Damon grew up in Boston and began acting in his high school theater. He made his big screen debut with one line in the film Mystic Pizza and has added more lines to his table reads today. Matt has won an Academy Award for the screenplay Good Will Hunting and has starred in hit films like Saving Private Ryan and the Ocean's Trilogy. On this episode of the Carlos Watson Show podcast, Matt Damon reflects on his new film Stillwater, why spending time with the Oklahoma Roughnecks opened his eyes to opposing political views, and his thoughts on his best friend Ben Affleck's romance with Jennifer Lopez.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Carlos, how are you? Sorry, you caught me yawning.
Oh, man. So how much are you worn out now? Are they just doing you back to back day in and day out, or what's happening?
Yeah, but I was just telling Carice, these are the longer form interviews. So they're much like easier. Like I enjoy them, you know, because they're more substantive. And the days that are really tough are when you do those 4 minute interviews. So I did that last week, which was like 64 minute interviews, which is just like,
oh, man,
you don't even understand English by the end of the day.
Sorry. So now who's the best interviewer? Who do you really either you enjoy or you get something out of? Who's really good?
Well, all these long form ones are good, right? Because I don't know where they're going to go. They're all different. The discussions are just a little more interesting. Like the short ones, like there's nobody who sticks out as a great 4 minute interviewer, because it's like saying who's the best actor on that sitcom. You know what I mean? You can't really tell.
Yeah. But what an interesting world that you do. I saw you with Dan Patrick and I enjoyed you guys together. That was kind of a good dynamic. It seemed like you guys were closer, even though he said he hadn't had you for 5 years.
Yeah, I was surprised, actually. I'm as I get older, you know, I'm 50 now. And as I get older, I'm just shocked at time. And you know what I mean? It's like, he said that to me today. We haven't done this in 5 years. And I was just astonished. I mean, I guess that's part of, you know, getting older is suddenly you lose 5 or 10 years and you blink and it's another decade.
Do you feel older at all? Do you, it's wild when you say 50, I know, I appreciate that. I hit that too. I won't admit it, but I hit that too.
You don't look it though. You don't look it at all.
You got to say that. But do you feel any type of way having turned 50 or not yet? Are you in a different place?
No, it's more my, before this 50, the concept of 50 to me was most familiar to me for some reason when my dad turned 50, we had a big birthday party for him. And I remember thinking, wow, he's really old. And which is in such contrast to how I feel and how I'm sure you feel. Like, I don't feel old at all. I feel great. So it's interesting, but I know people must look at me and go, oh, wow, he's, getting up there, you know.
Well, you know, two people I feel like have done something to the culture in terms of age. I feel like your friend Clooney, in an interesting way, has kind of stretched that sense of how long you're vibrant. And I also think in an interesting way, Oprah may have done that too. That, you know, she's almost 70. You never know it.
I can't even with her because it's like, what, you know, I don't understand how that happens. I mean, she looks fantastic. She looks so good. And she's not aging. Yeah, I mean, George isn't, I mean, George takes such good care of himself too, that he's just aging beautifully, right? I mean, you know, but these weird people are pretty good looking to begin with. So, you know, I'm just going to age, man.
You know what? You never know. I look at your boy, Tom, and he is, what is he, 44 now? How old is he now?
Yeah, he will be in a few days. Yeah, but his regimen is pretty significant. I mean, he really takes great care of himself. I mean, his everything depends on it. And there's no question that he's squeezed, you know, years more out of his body by just how diligent he's been, you know, with his diet, with his workout regime, with what Alex has him do. Like he, you know, that is, he's really an outlier specifically because of how he takes care of himself.
How early did you guys become friendly?
Oh, early on. I mean, I think I met him. He and Lawyer Malloy had little walk-on parts in Stuck on You in 2000.
Lawyer Malloy?
Yeah.
Who has heard that name in a while? That's
a
good one to pull out.
Yeah, they were. So I remember those guys coming down. Troy Brown was down there. Troy had a walk-on role. So the Farrelly brothers are, you know, Massachusetts guys. And so they're always sports figures hanging around those guys. And so those guys had little walk-on roles in Stuck on You. So I met Tom that would have been 2003. Actually, the same time I met my wife. I've been with my wife now for 18 years, and that was I met her on that movie.
Not bad. In Miami, in my hometown.
Oh, right. Yeah. Absolutely. Where I ended up living, where I ended up moving for 5 or 6 years.
And so what's that story? I call them When Harry Met Sally stories. What's the When Harry Met? I don't want to mispronounce your wife's name. Do you pronounce it Lucia, or how do you pronounce it?
It's just Lucy. Like Luciana is her name, but she goes by Lucy.
Lucy. So what's the When Lucy Met Matt story?
Well, I was out. It was a Saturday night, and I was out with just a bunch of people on the crew, and they decided to go to this bar, and I was just tagging along, and I came in and I literally, it sounds corny, but I saw her across a crowded room, and like there was, you know, like a beam of light on her. I remember she was smiling and laughing. And I just, you know, she is, you know, subsequently told me like, yeah, there was a spotlight, dummy. Like, that was the bartender. Like, yeah, there's a beam of light. You're an idiot. But I remember it in a much more romantic way, I think.
And where is she from originally? Where's home? Is she a Miamian or is she from elsewhere?
She was born in Argentina. And so she moved when she was 9 months old. They kind of fled. There was a military government down there and people were starting to disappear. And friends of her mom's were starting to disappear. And so they fled to America.
Interesting. And she was a Miamian or she fled elsewhere?
They lived in Miami for a long time and then they moved to California. She was out in Camarillo for a while. And then she did high school out in Camarillo. So she's Southern California, South Florida.
Not bad. So Matt, how did you end up doing Stillwater? Was that your idea? Did McCarthy pull you into it? Was it an agent did it? How did you come across it?
Tom sent me the script and I just thought it was great and unlike anything I'd ever done. And I'd really been wanting to work with him. We had a couple near misses and he's just a great filmmaker. And I always love the acting in his movies is always great. So he was someone I had my eye on for a while. And then the script showed up and I just thought it was excellent. So it was a super easy decision for me. You know, it kind of ticked every box for me.
What did you learn prepping for it? I heard that you went down to Oklahoma. You spent a bunch of time with folks down there. Did you learn anything new? Did it confirm what you thought you already knew? What happened for you going down there?
Yeah, I learned tons. I mean, what I didn't know was, you know, I read the script and I love the dynamics between the father and the daughter, between this character I was playing and all these other characters that come into the story. I just really believed it all. But I didn't understand the subculture of roughnecks and what that was. And so that was really eye-opening to go down to Oklahoma and hang out with these guys. Roughnecks work on the oil rigs and understand their perspective and, you know, try to understand what this character does and why he does everything he does. And it's a really particular subculture. And it's so different from, you know, where I grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's like, couldn't be more different. But really fascinating and really specific. And so all of the detail and the physicality of the performance and all of that stuff came from hanging with those guys down there. And I mean, if I were to have a takeaway, Carlos, it would be that I always leave those, like I'm very lucky to be able to do this thing, which is to kind of parachute into somebody else's life and observe them and they welcome me in because I'm an actor. And I just wish more people could do it, because I always leave feeling that we're so much closer and what binds us is so much greater than what divides us. And, you know, I always leave those trips angry at politicians for kind of stoking those divides. And you know, I was talking with Tom about it last night. We were just talking about what we should be celebrating, like the way these guys live in rural Oklahoma is so different than the way I live here in New York City. Like, why is that a bad thing? Like, that should be an amazing thing, a beautiful thing, that our country has that level of diversity of the way we all live and organize our lives and the communities that we bring together. Like, that's awesome. Like, you know, that shouldn't be a something we're arguing about or we're divided over. That should be something that is celebrated, because it's a massive big country with all these different ways of life and ways to live, and we should be celebrating all of it.
Hey, say more about that, because I don't know that I ever had a chance to spend time in a place like Stillwater and get immersed in something like that roughneck area. What is it like? What would we see? What might someone who grew up in Miami, and you got to make assumptions about me for a moment, or a guy who grew up in Cambridge.
Yeah.
Like, what did you see? What was it like?
All right. So like going home to Kenny Baker was the name of the guy that was really our first point of contact there. And he and this other guy, Ryan Stewart, really took us all around to their rigs and, you know, and we're explaining how to do the job, like showing us all that. But then we went to Kenny's house and to try to set the scene for you, he's on 60 acres in rural Oklahoma, Marlow, Oklahoma. And he just had a barbecue, and a bunch of the other roughnecks came over and their families and we just sat around in the backyard and ate and drank beer and ate barbecue. And it was like, and laughed about our political differences, you know what I mean? Just had the best day. Then a guitar came out and, you know, his daughter started singing with another friend of theirs. They started singing church songs and, you know, and we were just like, this is beautiful. Then the boys were like, you know, hey, Dad, can I get the shotguns? And they're like, yeah, they come out like with the shotguns, like broken down over their arm, exactly how you're supposed to like teach firearm safety. Like they knew exactly what they were doing. And then we went around and started skeet shooting competitions, because they all wanted to challenge Jason Bourne to a skeet shooting contest.
Right, of course.
I'm not going to say who won, but those kids could shoot.
Right.
I didn't get the gold medal. I made the podium, but okay. I didn't get the gold medal. And, you know, it was just, I was like, wow, man, this is such a different life than, you know, you couldn't do any of this in New York City, right? If you pull out a shotgun in New York City, you're under arrest, right? It's like, you know, there's people everywhere. You can't fire one of those things. You're going to hit somebody. So, but like out in rural Oklahoma, like this makes total sense. And they were a beautiful family and they were a beautiful community of friends. And it was just all positive. And you go like, all right, well, this is my way into this character, right? The values they have, the love they have for each other and for their families. And this is exactly what I feel. I just organize my life in an entirely different way because of my experience and where I'm from. So I always leave. It's like I always leave those things feeling like, yeah, the things that really matter to all of us. You know what I mean? And that is so much greater than these things, you know, the political differences we have. We literally would laugh them off, right? We poke fun at each other, you know, like I'm the Hollywood liberal, right? And so it's like,
So get into that. What did they, like, how deep did you guys go into the political difference stuff?
Well, I mean,
because a guy from Cambridge,
yeah,
Massachusetts, may be the most Democratic leaning state, it's got to be one of the top three or four.
It's got to be.
Oklahoma's got to be one of the top five, you know, red states, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm from the People's Republic of Cambridge within Massachusetts, right?
So exactly.
So yeah, no. But what was interesting to me was to try to understand. I'm playing one of these guys. I have to understand their thought process. And so to me, it boils down to, all right, yeah, they're in one of the reddest states, as you point out, maybe top five. They were up there last. I mean, I can't remember the last two elections. They were as red as you get. And they're working in the oil business, in the oil fields in particular, right? In Oklahoma. So they're going to vote red down the ticket no matter what. Like, that's not even there's no news there, right? Like, and for them, it's like a binary proposition. The way they look at it, this is what I do for my family. This is my job that protects my family, that provides for my family. Like, I'm going to vote that way. That's it. And it doesn't have to be any more complicated like that. I mean, you get, you know, every level of, you know, Republican, right? In that, I'm sure, in that. But for the guys that I talked to, it wasn't any more complicated than that. Like, this is, you know. And they talked openly about, like, you know, feeling like we're powering the country. Like, if y'all don't, you know, like, they don't like people looking down their nose at them. And then you go, like, I was with Kenny the other night here in New York City because he came up for the premiere with his family. And I had him over and we were looking out over the city. And he said, you know, these lights are on. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, you want to look down your nose at a roughneck, man. You know, you're using the power. Right. And so it's like, it's a really interesting, you know, that's his view. And like, he sees the hypocrisy in that. Right. So anyway, I left there really like having made some great friends and going back to what I was saying, that's one of the reasons I feel so lucky to do this job. Like how else would I have been able to do that? Like, the only other way would to do what you do, to be a journalist and go down and do a story, and you guys can embed and do that. But that's, I think those are the only two professions I can think of where we would be given that kind of access. Like, how else would I get to walk next to a guy who did that and parachute into his life in rural Oklahoma? But I'm really fortunate that I did.
That's really interesting when you say that, because I had another guy, Joel Kinnaman. I don't know if you know Joel, the actor.
Sure.
who was telling me that part of what
I was just with him last week.
Oh, yeah. I really like him. He's a big talent. I like him.
Great. He's a great actor.
Yeah. He told me, he said, Carlos, part of what I like about acting is it allows me actually to unleash some emotions or explore some emotions I probably wouldn't on my own. And
yeah,
whether that's grief, whether that's fear, whether that's excitement, whether that's surprise. He said, not only do I get to peek into people's lives, but I thought that was interesting. Is that true for you too? Is the emotional part there, or is it more maybe just for someone like him?
No, that's true. And I mean, this character behaves in ways that I wouldn't, you know. There's a scene in this movie that I love where this French lawyer is kind of giving me the runaround. And he starts to write out this list of private detectives. And I'm telling him, I don't want the list. Don't give me a list. And then I take it and I literally throw it. And it's this little flash of violence. And I swear at him, you know, I said, you know, I don't need your bleeping list. And the whole scene changes. Like, suddenly this guy who was kind of pompous and aloof, and like, suddenly he's like, oh, I might get my ass whooped right now by this roughneck. Right. And it's like, and I love that. But that's very, you know, that's not something I would do in my normal life. But there is a thrill when you invest that and it's real, and the director leaves the camera right on your, and you are not lying, right? Like, then that's the thing. That's the rush, is when you see it and you're like, yeah, I believe that. The Clint Eastwood had a great line about it. There's a scene in Mystic River when Sean Penn finds his daughter, they found her daughter's body, and he starts to scream, is that my daughter in there? And he's slowly realizing that the police are holding on to him, and he's just screaming, is that my daughter in there? And I asked Clint about it. I said, Clint, you know, you always do just one take. Like, how many takes did you do that? He goes, one. I'm like, so wow. He said, you know, so how'd you do that? He goes, well, I used real cops. Right. So they know how to restrain somebody. And I went over to the cops. I said, I didn't say anything to Sean. This is Sean Penn, right? Who's just one of the best actors to ever live. And he just said, I just went over to the cops and said, you better get a hold of this guy because he ain't going to be faking it. And that was the only direction he gave. And so what you see in Mystic River in that scene, you know, is, you know, but that's when an actor brings it, right? And that's the rush for us. So you're exploring things you would never, like to Joel's point, right? We all hope we never have to feel that, right? You know, but your job is to bring it real.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, give me your dream team. Give me your Fab Five of actors. And this is kind of like the all Madden team. It's, you know, it's all Damon team. I'm allowing you to define it any way you want. But when you said that, there was something interesting about how you were talking about that. And I want to hear from you. Like, if you and I were boys and we were just sitting, who's on the all Damon team? Who are those actors that for you, they are there? Who's there?
Living?
Or dead. This is your team.
Oh, man. Well, that's going to be all right. Well, I mean, Brando's really at the top of that list, at the top of the food chain. He really revolutionized everything. But the generation that came behind him, De Niro was a huge influence. You know, somebody asked me to name my favorite movies, some of my favorite movies the other day. And I just started to say, well, The Godfather and Godfather 2 and Goodfellas. And I started naming movies. And I realized De Niro was in all of them. so he was up there. But Gene Hackman was somebody for me that was a huge touchstone. I always found that he was not a showy actor. I loved what he did because it was just completely invested and real. And I just love Hackman. But he, I think, sometimes got overlooked because he wasn't as flash as some of the others.
I agree. Enemy of the State and The Firm.
Oh yeah.
Were among his best. I know people say French Connection and some of these other ones, but Enemy of the State. That moment with Will Smith when he said, what happened? He said, you made a phone call.
Right. You know?
and when you talk about somebody who went all the way there, it felt like he went all the way there.
Yeah, and the Enemy of the State, my recollection, it was kind of almost a call back to The Conversation, which was one of his masterful performances.
Yes, yes.
In the 70s.
That's a beauty. Yeah, that's
a
beauty.
Harry Call, yeah. So I'd say Meryl Streep, you know, I mean, on balance, she's one of the best actors to ever live. I mean, she's just, look at that body of work. It's just... this is a hard game, man. I you know, there's so many great actors, and you know, I'm gonna leave the last spot open that way nobody will get mad at me. Whenever I see one, I was going to say you.
You know what? I'm going to take it. I would put myself in there. All right. Now, now talk to me about your favorite movies, because I think I narrowed it down to my top three of yours, and it was Work, and I say that genuinely. But what's in your top three of your own work?
Of my own movies?
Oh, man. Of your own movies, your own.
I'd probably not be the best judge of these because I'm probably too close to them. But, I mean, Good Will Hunting certainly changed our lives completely. And so I can't really separate that movie from what it did to our lives, which has completely changed them. So I put that one up there. Man, I don't know. I don't know. What do you think? You tell me.
The Departed.
Oh, The Departed. Yeah, yeah.
The first three Bourne ones, I was mad at your boy Jeremy Renner that you even let him in the house. No disrespect to him. He's a fine actor.
I think he did great, man. I love Renner.
You're being nice. He didn't do what he needed to do in those first three. I think those may be the best action films I've seen.
And because thanks.
In my mind, there was, you guys made it, Franca Potente, all you guys made it so it was still believable. It was unlikely,
right?
But
right.
It was believable. Do you know what I mean? And so it felt like we got to go somewhere we normally wouldn't get to go.
Yeah, yeah. That's just two great directors, Doug Liman and Paul Greengrass, who are responsible for that. And I was lucky to be a part of those things. I had a great time making them. You know, it was just a real significant part of my life. I'm glad those came my way.
Hey, tell me about Good Will Hunting, because we always are talking on this show about how people dream fearlessly, how they break through. And I want to understand it, not only for myself, but for people who are watching. When you look back, why did that work? And what should other people take away from it, if anything? Maybe you say nothing. Maybe you just say that was a magic moment in time. But why did it work, and what can other people take away from it?
Well, Ben and I always said, because there were a lot of different ways that movie could have been set up, there were a lot of different ways we could have gone with the story. And what we always said, and we benefited from really, really great executives who developed that movie, and developed it towards what it became. So we really benefited from just wonderful, smart people, who had power and who got the best out of us. And but what we always said was, you know, this will show how dated it was. We'd say, even if it's a video cassette on our mantle, right? We need to love it. You and me need to love it. And I think the purity of that, of just making the movie for ourselves, just the one that we're making, the thing that we loved, and not trying to imagine what it is. Like, I always see people twist themselves into knots in this business going like, here's what I think people want to see, right? It's like, well, don't do that. Just do what you want to see. Because at the very least, I mean, it's always hit or miss with movies. Sometimes they catch on and sometimes they don't. At least you'll love it. Right. At least you'll stand by it. And I'd seen too many actors kind of go, well, I'm doing this movie because I don't like it, but I think it's what people want to see. And then they spend 6 months of their life on it. And then the movie comes out and nobody goes and sees it because everybody who made the movie is not really invested in it. And, you know, and then you've just lost 6 months of your life. So I'd say to work on the things that you really have a passion for and love, and just try to make the thing that you love. And there's a universality and specificity, right? So if you love it, there's a chance other people will love it too.
Hey, what's your sliding doors? If this thing hadn't worked out, I know you were at Harvard. I know you left early. What do you think would have happened? Do you even know what would have happened if this thing hadn't worked out?
No, it could be a myriad things could happen. I feel like I always felt like I wanted to do this. And so I would have kept slugging it out. I mean, there's, you know, I loved writing. So, I mean, I felt like I can write, I can act, I can, you know, there's certainly a more modest life I could carve out for myself, taking smaller roles. I felt like, you know, it's very feast or famine, this business, but I did feel like the business was signaling back to me that I'd go to an audition and I'd get called back, you know, or I'd get called back a few times. I might not get the part, but the casting director would say that was a really good audition. And those little ways that the business kind of signals to you, you're in the right line of work. You know, it might not happen for a while, but you're in the right line of work. And so I felt like I didn't really need a plan B. I felt like, I'm going to make a living. I can make a career out of this. I don't know what that will look like, but I can do what I love to do.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, talk to me, a little bit of a wild swing, but go with me for a second. Obviously, the last year, more conversation about race than we as a country, maybe we as a world have had in 50 years.
Yeah.
Anything interesting in there for you or surprising or different? Or did you find yourself, you know, in a new place as it relates to that, either looking back or looking forward on questions of race? And I realize we could spend, you know, years having this, so I'm not asking for that, but I literally am curious, knowing that we now feel like we're in the midst of a reentry, and so there is a moment to look backwards and to reflect. And anything in there for you?
I guess I think about it through the lens of my kids, and trying to help them understand. Like, we were out of the country when George Floyd was killed, and just trying to explain a crazy world to children, you know? And I think of it through that lens, because I'm trying to think of how I talk to them about it. Like we went down to Breonna Taylor's, you know, there was at the downtown in LA, everyone was laying flowers one day. And we went down to a BLM protest, but we went by and we paid respects and laid flowers. Like, I wanted them to understand, you know what I mean? It's like, how do I bring them along to understand this country through in the context of race, right? Like, how can I help them? And I try to think about how it was done for me. I mean, I grew up in Cambridge, which was like, didn't feel like the real world. It was like, as we said, the People's Republic of Cambridge. It was a melting pot. Like, you know, my school, my Cambridge Regional Latin, was like, you know, 3,000 kids. My class was 750 kids. Like, I remember our graduation, they said, we have 170 countries represented in our high school. And a couple months later, I got to Harvard, and at the convocation speech, they were like, we have 83 countries represented. And I was like, wow. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I was really lucky to grow up where I grew up. And, you know, and it's interesting to see how this generation looks at these issues, because it's, you know, it's not the way we looked at them, but I'm from a very specific place. And so I just have to, like, do my best to try to listen. And also in the context of knowing that I have, like, you talk about blind spots, like, I'm an American male white movie star. Like, that is like, that is rarefied air. You know what I mean? And I got to work to try to understand what life is like for most people. You know what I mean? So I think about it all kind of in that context too.
Any interesting conversation with the guys down in Stillwater, Oklahoma? And again, I'm not looking for a particular answer. I'm just curious, given that you had a chance to kind of spend time, and I assume that either was there explicitly or implicitly. Anything interesting there, matters of race?
It didn't come up, though they alluded to the fact that some of the guys they work with were racist. And we put that in the movie. There's a scene in which I get we're trying to get information from this guy who's overtly racist, but he's having this conversation in French with Camille's character. And my character's sitting there witnessing it, but he doesn't understand what's happening. And she's so offended that she gets up and I follow her and say, like, what's going on, right? And she says, well, he's racist. And I'm like, that's it? And she's like, that's it? He's willing to just put any Arab kid in jail. And I'm like, well, maybe he knows something, right? Maybe we still got to talk to him. And she's saying, no, you know, and Bill says, I work with guys like that all the time. He says, it's a really interesting line. He goes, she's saying, I'm not going to talk to him. And he says, well, you must live in some fancy world, honey, because I work with guys like that all the time. And what he's saying is he's voicing this kind of blue collar argument of like, I can't choose who I work with. I got to take a job when I got to take a job. And she's saying, from the kind of the perspective of the cultural elite, I wash my hands of this and I won't talk. And they're both right and they're both wrong. You know what I mean? Like, his point of it, you can't not engage, right? How is anything going to change if you don't talk, right? If I can't even listen to you, then where are we going to get, right? But at the same time, you know, you know, what this guy's doing is completely beyond the pale. He's not, you know, he's willing to put an innocent person in jail simply because they're Arab. So, you know, but anyway, those are some of the themes that are kind of charging through our movie. And those are based on conversations that we had with people down in Oklahoma.
Man, I wish I was there with you on both pieces of that. Hey, you mind if I finish up by doing a little rapid fire with you, hit you with a handful of quick things?
Sure, man.
Your favorite book of all time?
Oh, man. Favorite book of all time. All right. It's going to sound like a cop out, but I got to probably go Catcher in the Rye. Actually, you know what? I'm going to amend that. I'm going to tell you my favorite book of all time. Probably I've read it a number of times. I've read The Princess Bride to all of my kids. So I've read it, I think, three times now. And I read the final two, got it at the same time. Before bed, and the fun that I had overacting and doing all the voices, like, there were literally nights where they were asleep and I kept going because I was having so much fun. So I'll say that that's kind of an irreverent fun book.
I like that. Most valuable or interesting thing you've learned about parenting, especially as the dad of daughters?
Humility.
Appropriate.
Every day. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know if other parents out watching this can relate, but I did. There are those nights where you just put your head on the pillow and you go, man, I screwed that up. Like, I could have done better. And it's like, you know, it's a relentless job, and it's not, you can't get it right all the time. And so humility in general is a good thing to carry with you.
Most impressive person you've ever met. And I'm purposefully making impressive to be defined however you want to define it.
Nelson Mandela. I met Nelson Mandela twice, and I can't think of a human being that is more impressive than Nelson Mandela. I mean, I've met some wonderful people in the nonprofit world who do incredible work, but what Mandela did, it's funny. There's the guy. So we made that movie about him, and it was based on a book. And the guy who wrote the book's name was John Carlin, and he was the bureau chief for the Independent. And he was in South Africa at the time of, you know, the ending of apartheid and Mandela coming out of prison. And John knew Mandela personally. And I was having dinner with him about 10 years ago. And I said, what is it? Like the conundrum, the central conundrum about Mandela was, how could you, you know, we even have this line, I think, in Invictus, where you say, how could you spend 27 years in prison? and come out and forgive the people who put you there. Like, how does that happen? You forgive your jailer? Like, you know, and that's the central conundrum of this man. Like, was he an angel? Like, what? And John said, which I thought was really great, he said, no, I believe Nelson Mandela is what we're going to evolve into in 500 years.
That's ruthless.
Isn't that great?
I love that. That is a big, wonderful thought.
Yeah. And it was from a guy who had written a book about him and spent a lot of time with him and, you know, and really thought deeply about it. But I couldn't get past is he even human? Like, is he an angel? Right. Like, what, who could do that? And that was what John came back at me with. And I never forgot it.
Man, that is a mic drop moment, but I'm still gonna hit you with two more. That's a mic drop moment. That is a really, Werner Herzog said something similar to me. I said, where will we be? What will be going on if you and I get together in 10 years? And he said, you think too small. He said, in 400. And I love that.
Wow.
And what you just said about John Carlin, that's a very nice way to expand your sense of possibility.
Well, and hopefully Werner's right too, and you and I can both be that thing and evolve in over 500 years. Right?
I like that. Nice synthesis. Bring all that together. All right, I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Greatest athlete of all time, Matt Damon edition.
Greatest athlete of all time. Man, that's so brutal. Because of course, you know, I mean, I know Barkley said Tom and. But even Tom said he wasn't, right? And you think athlete, like I think a sport where you need to move more, right? So it's like, you know, I would probably go with a basketball player, which means that I'm probably leaning more towards Michael or LeBron. But you know what, you know, they say the hardest thing in sports is to hit a round ball with a round bat. So does that make you have to go, you know, Barry Bonds at the height of his hitting prowess, right? But, you know, he was a DH, I think, for a lot of it. You know, he wasn't, I don't know. It's kind of an impossible question, but I don't think you can go wrong with MJ.
You know, only a Bostonian would have put baseball even in contention. We realize nobody else, only a Bostonian would have put a baseball player even in the conversation. So kudos to Carlton Fisk and to Ted Williams and all those guys that just like draped you guys in the baseball conversation.
That's it. But I have read hitting a ball with a bat is considered the toughest thing to do. So I, you know, but you're right. It doesn't feel as much like an athletic endeavor as say basketball.
All right, last couple. Most beautiful place you've ever been in the world?
Probably Kauai. I would say the North Shore of Kauai.
Ooh. And an Airbnb guy, hotel guy, what do you do?
Airbnb for movies. I'm in a hotel today for the press, but normally, you know, I got to crash in a city for a few months and normally, you know, an apartment's going to be better than a hotel for longer term living. But on the promotional tours, it's usually hotel, but when we're shooting, it's usually an Airbnb.
Bennifer going to make it or no?
Oh man, I'm no one's pulling harder than I am. They're both great. I just want for their happiness, and they seem pretty happy right now.
Hey, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time. And as I said, so many folks here on the team, there was such excitement about you coming today, and so we really thank you on behalf of the whole team here at the show. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate you having me. I love the interview. Thank you.
Hey, man, I appreciate you. You guys have some good news coming in the Celtics and Patriots this year. You got good news coming.
I know, man. And we got to stop this, like these rumors about Tatum. Like, why is his name in Jaylen Brown? Why are their names in the paper all the time? Stop it. We got to keep those guys.
You know, they shouldn't. Tatum's a beautiful player. Watching Devin Booker is going to only make him be better. He could give you 36, 37 points a game next year.
I know. He might.
Yeah.
He might. Yeah, so we'll see. Who's your team, by the way?
I've got a mixed bag. I now just like players. I like scrappy players. So I was rooting for Kemba Walker. You know who my guy originally was?
Who?
Rajon Rondo.
Really?
I'm a Rajon Rondo. I'm the one guy who's a Rajon Rondo guy. But I loved, you know, how does someone dislocate their arm in the middle of a game and still stay in it the whole time. Fantastic.
How does a guy have like 26 assists and 3 points?
You know what? You could be nicer to him. He got you guys a ring.
I know.
Yeah, that was not his strong suit.
No, but what was amazing, it's like, haven't you figured out this dude is just going to pass? Like, he's not taking a shot. He knows he can't shoot.
He did it. But he had that 144-point game, if you remember.
Well, that's the thing, right? You couldn't sleep on him. So that's what Dennis – they used to try to fall off Dennis Johnson.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember a game in the 80s where DJ was shooting, like, push shots.
Yeah.
He didn't even – they weren't even jump shots. It was like he was playing horse because – no, it was like I think we were playing the Pistons, and they just backed off him to double down. And DJ was like, are you going to tell me that I can shoot 15-foot push shots all day? Because you're going to lose, right? And that's pretty
By the way, your friend DJ doesn't get credit. I know they talk about Havlicek stole the ball, and I know you obviously talk about the Carlton Fisk stuff. I still think Bird stealing was important. DJ's underhanded layup. 99 guys out of 100 missed that shot.
Look, I mean, it was reverse and like back up over his head, you know.
Correct. That was a crazy shot. 99 guys missed that shot.
I know. But you know, Larry Bird, I mean, see, being a Boston geek, I read his book a long time ago, and he talked about that play. And, you know, he referred to Dennis Johnson as the best basketball player he ever played with. He said DJ was the best player he ever played with. And he talked about that steal. And he said, I stole it and I instantly thought, you know, I can turn and get a shot off. It's going to be off balance, like 18-foot fall away jump shot. And he said, and I saw a green flash, and that green flash was Dennis Johnson. You know, he goes, and that's that guy instantly anticipated his steal and was there in just the right place to barely lay it in. I mean, and a really tough reverse layup. Like, yeah, he was awesome.
You guys have had too much good luck. You, the Bostonians,
it's been weird.
You guys have had more than your share.
Yeah, definitely. It's been weird the last two decades are weird.
Right.
Like, it's not the way Boston, like, our code in the Matrix got rewritten. What's going on? Like, why are we winning everything? Like, it's weird. So, but these teams will be fun. Like, I think the Celtics are going to be one of those teams that'll be fun because they're going to be in it and they're going to be really fun. They're like a fun team to watch and root for. But it looks like there's that other echelon. You know what I mean? Like,
well, you know, I don't know what happened there, because you guys had something beautiful going when you were up 3-1 on LeBron, and that, it's like it robbed their soul, because Jalen and Jason, I don't know, they were on their way to some Clay Steph stuff.
I know, it seemed like it. It seemed like it, but we'll see. I mean, we'll see. We'll be in the conversation, and we'll be really fun to root for. But, you know, Brooklyn's no joke. I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
you know what though? And maybe I'm wrong here. I think Brooklyn missed their window. Something. Well, your boy Kyrie, and he did hit that big shot, but like, he may be a guy who only ever had one big shot in him. I hate saying that.
Wow.
But that may be the case. And I don't know.
Well, we'll see. It'll be fun. It's definitely like, these guys have figured out that they have all the leverage. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they're all like friends, and they're like calling each other like, dude, where do you want to go play? Like, if you and me play together, like, we can do, you know what I mean? It's like, and so you're getting all these super teams just pop up, and you're like, whoa, wait, where, you know what I mean? It's cool. It's really cool. So.
Hey, Matt, will you tell Liz Fox, who I work with here, that it's okay that we talk sports? Because she's watching you and me right now. And she's frustrated. Liz Fox, I work with Liz.
Liz, it's
she's
okay
frustrated
to talk
that we're talking about sports.
Come on, the interview's already over. We're just talking about sports. We're just hanging out. It's okay.
Hey, man, have a great day. And again, thank you for making time for me and for us. We appreciate it.
All right, I appreciate it. I'll see you next time, Carlos. Thanks,
okay,
man.
All right, be safe. Right. See you again.
Yeah, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Carlos Watson Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.